T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Sir, thank you. We're welcoming Greg Upton, Assistant Research Professor at LSU's Center for Energy Studies, to talk about Governor John Bel Edwards' plan to reduce carbon emissions. Have you ever seen that movie, Greg, Thunder Bay?
I have not, but I'm definitely going to go look it up and watch it now that you say so.
I think you'd probably have a couple of laughs, because I don't think the history of supposedly he's out of the service. Yeah, the movie was made in 1953, and he's got this revolutionary idea to have an offshore drilling platform or rig. When did that really start in Louisiana?
The offshore activity?
Yeah.
That's pretty accurate. Probably the 1950s
okay.
is whenever
you started
drilling in water.
Well, that's what it was about. And knowing that I was going to talk to you today, it just kind of struck me how oil and gas is, especially since that time, when you talk about fooling with that and reshaping the economy of Louisiana, you're going to get a lot of attention from a lot of people, and not a lot of it's going to be positive.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. It's really a kind of difficult conundrum as the world looks at decarbonizing, reducing our greenhouse gas emissions. Areas like Louisiana that are not only big oil and gas producers historically, but perhaps more importantly today, are big processors of hydrocarbons to create, liquid fuels, chemicals, plastics, fertilizers, all these products that we ship all over the world. Increasingly, the question that we're going to have to ask ourselves is, how do we reduce the greenhouse gas emissions of these products such that they're marketable in a future where buyers and governments are cognizant of the value chain and the emissions associated with it.
And for people that are listening right now that think, I want to get rid of oil and gas, that is somebody texted about that movie. Huge parts of that movie were filmed in Little Morgan City, plenty of locals having parts. Well, thanks for that information about it as Greg decides to watch Thunder Bay. Anyway, you can't really overstate the importance of oil and gas throughout the years to our economy in Louisiana. Can you, Greg?
I mean, we're definitely a historically big oil and gas state, and it's really, there are kind of two pieces of that. Of course, the first is the upstream oil and gas extraction, which I think a lot of people, when they think of oil and gas, that's what you really think about, someone drilling a well, which is sounds like this movie Thunder Bay. But in Louisiana, that employment has really dropped significantly over the years. And if you just look even today versus the pre-2014 oil price crash, we've actually lost about half of that industry in the state. That's been a difficult story. But the other piece of the industry that we've actually seen growth in is refining and chemical manufacturing, kind of this petrochemical sector. And that is the sector that takes those hydrocarbons and processes them into products that you and I use every day, whether that's the gasoline we fill up our fuel tank with, the plastics, chemicals. And what makes that particularly interesting here in Louisiana is we have this very robust port system. And so we're shipping these products all over the world. And that is just a huge contributor to our local economies, especially here in the river corridor between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, where you and I live.
I don't want to spend a lot of time looking back, but for people that don't remember, or maybe we're not old enough to be aware of the heyday of oil and gas prior to the 80s bust, how would you describe it?
I think the biggest indicator that you can look at historically was that during the 1970s and into the early 1980s, in some years, about half of the revenue that the state government received was directly from severance taxes and royalty payments from production on state lands and water bottoms. To put that into perspective, that did not include the corporate income taxes that were being paid by the workers. It didn't include the sales taxes or the income taxes. That was just the severance taxes. And in 1982, when that oil price crash happened, that reduced to, I need to go look at the specific numbers, but to maybe 15% in only a few years. And that just had huge implications for how our government functioned, how we think about taxes and spending in the state of Louisiana that really persist to today. And so I think that was a historical kind of defining moment for our state of, you know, how do we move forward with the industries that we have?
Let's talk about the final draft that was released Tuesday morning, last Tuesday, of Governor John Bel Edwards' Climate Initiatives Task Force to, I guess they want to, it's a net zero plan for reshaping Louisiana's economy, and it's based on three pillars, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So in August of 2020, Governor Edwards signed an executive order to create, quote, the Climate Initiatives Task Force. And so he called upon a task force to be created that would include people from government, industry, advocacy groups, academics, et cetera, to come up with kind of a blueprint, if you will, for how Louisiana could achieve significant reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. And so there were kind of three targets that were stated in the executive order: a 26 to 28% reduction by 2025, which, of course, is right around the corner here, a 40 to 50% reduction by 2030, and then net zero by 2050. And so this proposed plan, which will be finalized sometime next month, but it's getting really close, it currently has 28 quote-unquote strategies and 84 quote-unquote actions. And as you mentioned, there's kind of three big pillars, if you will, that each one of those actions falls within.
You want to start with the first one? It has to do with electricity?
Absolutely. So the first one is renewable electricity generation. And so according to the governor's plan, it says, quote, increasing Louisiana's renewable electricity to meet current and future demand. And so that, if you dig into it a little bit more, into the actual plan, it actually uses renewable and clean electricity generation. So this will, of course, include things like hydroelectric power, solar power, wind, but also includes things like nuclear power, which does not emit greenhouse gas emissions, as well as, interestingly, natural gas generation if it is paired with carbon capture technology. So that's kind of the first pillar, is to reduce the carbon intensity of the electric grid here in Louisiana. So moving on to the second pillar is industrial electrification. And so what this means is a lot of the processes that we use in industrial applications currently use fuel. And so when you combust a fuel, of course, you create an emission of a greenhouse gas. And so if you're able to switch some of those processes to using electricity, if that first pillar is achieved, you're able to reduce the total greenhouse gas emissions of those industrial processes. And then the third pillar, which is a bit more, I guess, complicated and probably something that your average person out there is not familiar with, but it's talking about industrial fuel switching. And so currently right now, a lot of the fuel that's used in industrial processes is natural gas. And whenever you combust natural gas, you, of course, create carbon dioxide, which goes into the atmosphere. Theoretically, instead of using natural gas, you can use another molecule, hydrogen. And whenever you use hydrogen to create heat for these processes, it actually doesn't emit carbon dioxide. It actually just creates water vapor whenever you do that. And so this is kind of the third pillar of switching away from using natural gas towards using this hydrogen. It's a way of still producing these products, but not having those carbon emissions while you're doing it.
I only have about 1,000 questions, so we're going to take a break, and I'll begin asking when we come back, all right?
Sounds great.
All right, Greg Upton, Assistant Research Professor at LSU's Center for Energy Studies. We're talking about the governor's plan to reduce carbon emissions to net zero by 2050. That's going to dramatically reshape Louisiana and the economy, and we'll talk about that more when we come back. I don't know how attainable it is. I don't know if it's a situation where it's the right thing to do, but is it practical? Is it going to make any difference? We'll delve into it when we come back. 920, I'm Tommy Tucker. This is WWL. 925 here at WWL, Monday morning, January 17th. Sunny and cool on this Martin Luther King Day. Highs of 58, no mail. No banks, no Wall Street because of the holiday. We're talking to Greg Upton, assistant research professor at LSU Center for Energy Studies, about Governor Edwards' plan, net zero plan, and he's talking about net zero carbon emissions by 2050. Is that right? Do I get that right, Greg?
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, greenhouse gas emissions, so that would include methane and a few other things, but mostly carbon.
All right, so as proposed, if enacted, what would this do to oil and gas? Would this be at the expense of the oil and gas industry in Louisiana? And what about the jobs that go along with it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, keep in mind that this is just a kind of strategy, a roadmap, if you will, that has 84 individual actions, that these actions would need to be taken by numerous people, and not only the, you know, state legislature, but the Public Service Commission, and so as well as private industry. And so in order to achieve this kind of roadmap, if you will, each and every one of these actions would need to be pursued pretty aggressively, which not to say that they didn't put a lot of work into this plan, but that's probably an unlikely kind of situation, quite
because
frankly.
There's not the political will to do it, correct?
Well, it's because there's not the political will, but also there's just some, you know, physics kind of constraints that we deal with in our energy systems that are difficult to overcome. The reality is that, you know, each and every one of us uses energy every day. We use it to transport us to where we're going. We use it for the electricity in our homes, et cetera. The products that we consume, those have energy embedded into them. And so, you know, if we look at the alternative of, okay, how do we reduce those emissions associated with the energy, there's going to be trade-offs. That's going to increase the cost of those products, which is therefore we're going to reduce our consumption of other goods and services and other things that we care about. You can think about healthcare. You can think about housing. There are lots of different trade-offs here. And so I think that, you know, this plan is definitely focused specifically on emissions, but there are other objectives, both for policymakers as well as us as the general public, that have to be considered alongside reducing these emissions.
So leaving the politics, I'm sorry, Greg, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, not at all. And so, you know, kind of going back to your initial question is, what does this mean for our historical industries? You know, I think that the key to think about, for me anyway, is that it doesn't really matter what the government does here in Louisiana, in that across the world, governments are saying, hey, look, we want to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. Companies, major oil and gas companies, are saying, you know, we want to reduce our oil and gas or our greenhouse gas emissions across the value chain. And so if Louisiana wants to continue to export these products all over the world, which supports our jobs here, then we need to think about two things. Number one, reducing those emissions, but also doing so in a way that's cost competitive. And I think it's going to be the balancing of those two things that allows us as a state to continue having our economic activity while achieving these environmental goals.
Somebody texted in here that net zero is fairy dust and unicorn energy, impossible to do in that time span, and it may well be impossible to do in that time span. However, when you're talking about oil and gas, you're talking about significant capital investment, future planning, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess I'm wondering, how do the energy companies view this long term? Do they take it into consideration, or do they realize that it is not attainable, that it's not going to happen, and it's just something that is making its way through the news cycle? And I mean that with no disrespect to the governor at all.
Yeah, I mean, so I think companies are starting to say that they're implementing these, and you might have heard the buzzword ESG, which means environmental and social governance. And so these corporations are starting to consider in their actions not only what the impact is on the bottom line and the impact on their investors, but also what their environmental and social impacts are on the society. And so these companies are constantly trying to think about how to balance, how do we reduce these emissions, but how do we do so in a way that's also going to be cost competitive? And so, I really think that that's the key. And so, yeah, these companies want to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. Yes, they're making large investments today in order to do that into the future, but it's not going to be overnight. And it's going to be something that the strategies of how to do that evolve as time progresses and new technologies come out.
This is going to be a terrible analogy, but I'll make it. A friend of mine was addicted to opioids, okay, opiates, whatever you call them. And he saw that they were not going to be as available as they once were with the feds cracking down. So he weaned himself off of them. Is it kind of the same thing where big oil and gas realizes that because of the legislative or political climate, maybe even the actual real climate itself, that they're not going to be able to continue in the same business they're in? So rather than looking at being in the oil and gas business, they're going to look at it as being in the energy business and as a result pivot?
Yeah, sure. So I think that, and I don't want to speak for any company, but mm-hmm. you know, a lot of the companies that I speak to quite often is that they have always described themselves as energy companies, not necessarily oil and gas companies. And so I think that even aside from environmental concerns of global climate change, companies that have historically had large presence in oil and gas know that that is just not going to be the energy forever. There's going to be technologies that change. There's going to be and that's going to just fundamentally impact our societies. And so any company, again, regardless of those environmental concerns, has to always be ready for those transitions. You know, a good example of that is Blockbuster when Netflix came out. This kind of famous example is that Blockbuster had an opportunity to purchase Netflix, and they didn't do so early on, and we all know how that story ended. And so I think oil and gas companies are looking at that into the future, not only for these environmental concerns, but also the world changes over time, and sometimes that can be a good thing.
And in that type of business, you got to think decades down the line. You can't think about 5 years, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you think about the investment in a chemical facility or a refinery. The payoffs of these to get your investment back, you're exactly right. You're talking decades. The same thing with offshore oil and gas production. You think about exploring for those resources and then drilling and starting to produce. Again, you're talking decades. And so that's why this process of decarbonization globally is going to take time. It's because you've got these long-term investments. And because in order to bring in those new investments today, that'll hopefully reduce emissions into the future. Again, it's going to take time to ramp those up, and so it's a waiting game. It takes patience, but hopefully, you know, we're focused on it as an industry, we're focused on it as a community, and as a way that Louisiana can reduce those emissions, such that we can continue to be globally competitive into the decades to come.
I only have 998 questions left, Greg. So let me take a break and. I'll pick it up when we come back. We're talking with Greg Upton, our friend, assistant research professor at LSU's Center for Energy Studies, about the governor's plan to reduce carbon emissions to net zero by 2050. And when we come back, let's go from the ground up. If I'm working in oil and gas now, what does that mean to me? If I own an oil and gas supply company, what does that mean to me? What is that going to look like? A lady right down the street from me owns a oil and gas supply company. 9:35, time for traffic now on WWL. 9:41:19 before 10. Greg Upton, nice enough to give us an hour of his day, assistant research professor at LSU Center for Energy Studies, as we talk about Governor John Bel Edwards' plan to reduce carbon emissions to net zero by 2050. Greg, quickly, LSU, how's enrollment looking for the spring semester? When do you guys start?
I haven't seen the final enrollment, but we actually start tomorrow. Today's, of course, a holiday for Martin Luther King Day. But the enrollment last semester was actually very strong. And so LSU's actually doing really well through this pandemic. I've been quite pleased with that. There's a lot of uncertainty going into it.
I told a UNO professor this earlier. I may audit one of your courses so I can be in the guy in the back of the class going, "Professor, professor, wait, professor, professor," and ask a lot of inane questions and eat up all of the class time. What do you think?
That sounds great. I'm teaching an energy supply chain class in the MBA program here this semester. So come on down, Tommy. I'd love to have you. It's in the afternoon.
Oh, the students would love that, wouldn't they? The guys working on it for a real grade, they'd love somebody auditing the class, eating up the class time, so that at the end you would say, "Well, we're out of time. Read the material. Good luck on the exam." All right, let's talk about oil and gas. So I'm in the oil and gas industry, and I think it's only natural, Greg, when I see a plan to reduce carbon emissions and net zero by 2050, I think that you're coming after me. It may be true, it may be not, but that's the way I'm going to feel. You think that's accurate?
Yeah, I really understand that feeling. But what I would tell someone in that instance is that, you know, here in the United States, we're extremely fortunate. We're one of the richest countries in the world. We're the richest people that have ever existed in this planet, historically looking. And we just have access to all of this energy, and it's really made our lives really wonderful. But there's still hundreds of millions of people globally, and in particular in Asia, and even more specifically China and India, that are seeing access to energy products for the first time. They're seeing access to transportation for the first time and having their own vehicles. They're seeing access to electricity for the first time. And so there's an enormous need for growth in energy demand globally. And because of this and the export-oriented nature of our economy that we've already talked about today, I think there's ample opportunity for oil and gas production well into the future. And so it's one thing to talk about, you know, decarbonizing here. It's another thing to talk about kind of this energy transition in the developing or in the developed world. I'm sorry. But, you know, my personal view is that we're going to continue to see demand for those products out decades into the future.
In terms of the science of this, unless all 50 states, unless all the countries get on the same page, are we like headed to hell in a handbasket, or is it just going to slow the journey if some countries and not others get on the renewable energy bandwagon, if you will, or train?
Yeah. So your question's with regard to the actual climate impact in
yes,
the future.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. So that's a really great question. So it's actually funny you ask. I'm reading a book right now by Stephen Koonin. The name of the book is Unsettled, and he was the former Undersecretary for Science for the Department of Energy under the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. And he's an actual climate scientist. I'm an economist. And he really talks about in this book, you know, what climate science can tell us and what it can't tell us into the future. And I think that a lot of, you know, perspectives like this is one that says, look, carbon emissions and greenhouse gas emissions, they are impacting the planet. This is definitely something that us as humans should be concerned about and concerned with reducing. But that also has to be balanced with this economic growth, in particular in the developing world that I was talking about a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the examples we kind of teach in class is that here in the United States, we're very fortunate. And then when a woman is pregnant, she can go to a hospital and she can have an ultrasound. But you go to parts of the world where perhaps a woman will only get an ultrasound one time during her pregnancy. And if she shows up to the clinic that day and there's no electricity, she can't get that ultrasound. And that has big impacts into the future. And so there's this ethical dilemma, this trade-off, if you will. Am I willing to tell someone that they're not allowed to have access to that energy, to have that ultrasound in order to reduce this environmental externality? That's a really difficult question. And so I think it's, you know, views like this and this book that I'm talking about that show that, hey, look, maybe there's not some draconian future if we continue emitting carbon. Yes, we should reduce it. And yeah, we should take these steps to do so. But I think that when you look at the climate science, I don't think it's this, you know, there are people out there that has these kind of Armageddon views, but I'm not sure that that's the mainstream view.
to provide maybe a measure of comfort to people in the oil and gas industry, and I don't say that in a patronizing way at all. I mean, it's seriously, the things that we depend on for oil and gas, we're going to depend on that for a long, long time, right? Non-energy things I'm talking about, Greg, if you follow me.
Absolutely. So the molecules that come out of the ground that we extract are also used for plastics. They're also used for chemicals. They're used for fertilizers. And so not every one of these products we produce is a combustible fuel, such as gasoline or diesel and jet fuel. So, yeah, absolutely. I think there's a future where you could have oil and gas extraction while at the same time having a zero net greenhouse gas emission future. The other thing to point out is that, and this is something that there's a lot of research in right now, is what's called carbon capture technologies. Mm-hmm. And so even if you extract the oil and natural gas and you use that in some industrial process, you can take the carbon dioxide that's emitted, and instead of emitting it into the atmosphere, you can put that into the ground in these deep underground reservoirs where it'll stay into the future. And so for a variety of reasons, my personal view is that we're going to have oil and gas extraction here in Louisiana and the Gulf Coast region for decades and decades to come. Of course, there could be some technological advancement that no one predicts, but under current scenarios, I think that's a pretty likely situation in the future.
You're talking John Galt stuff?
I'm not familiar with John Galt.
Oh, from Atlas Shrugged, the perpetual energy machine? I thought something like that. When it comes to the generation of electricity. Somebody texted this in, and I like to get the audience involved. They ask about nuclear, and it would seem to me that nuclear would solve a lot of the ills in terms of power generations. Why not more focus on nuclear?
You know, this is a wonderful question. Fatih Birol, who is the president of the International Energy Agency, has made this kind of his talking point over the last few years. And last year, he actually won one of the Time People of the Year for this exact point that he's making. In Louisiana, to put this in perspective, we have two nuclear generating facilities, two. Both of them were built back in the 1980s. And today, that makes up 14% of our electricity generation mix. And so, if you want to talk about just a one-time investment that can significantly reduce your carbon emissions of the electric grid, nuclear is a really, really great option. So I think that's a great point, and I hope it's something that we consider in the future as we're looking at decarbonization.
So why is it not considered more? Is it a safety concern? Is it a political concern? Is it about perception?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there's a few things that are legitimate concerns with nuclear, but I mean, there are concerns with every energy source, but one of them is what do you do with the nuclear waste? And so you might have heard of Yucca Mountain, which is a place that the United States was going to store all of its nuclear waste. For political reasons, that has become difficult. And so the nuclear waste issue is an issue. The second thing is how do you decommission these plants? And so it's actually really expensive to decommission a nuclear plant once it's at the end of its useful life. But these useful lives go many, many years. Sometimes, they can go 50 years, for instance. Mm-hmm. And so there are legitimate issues. But the thing that Fatih Birol points out is that there are legitimate issues with every energy source that we use. It doesn't matter what it is, whether you're talking about solar or wind, whether you're talking about natural gas or nuclear. And so if our priority right now is to reduce these greenhouse gas emissions, which it seems is a national priority, is the priority of this task force here in Louisiana and the priority of many of these companies, nuclear is a really great option that is proven to generate a lot of electricity with no carbon emissions associated with it.
And before we let you go, solar, we are a long way away from solar even being able to compete with nuclear, are we not?
No, I don't think so. I think there's a lot of opportunity for solar, yeah. If you look right now what's going on in Louisiana, we actually have, last I pulled, almost 10,000 megawatts of projects that are being planned right now. And so I think that we're going to see solar built in Louisiana. And when I say solar, I'm talking utility scale solar, not what's on your roof,
right?
Into the future. But if you just do the math of how many of those solar facilities you would have to build in order to take up the carbon emission reductions of one nuclear plant, it is a whole lot of solar. And so I think that's what makes nuclear really attractive in that regard.
And wind, not a serious competitor as of now?
I think that, you know, we're still a few years out for wind in the Gulf Coast is what I'm told by the engineers and project planners for regulatory and technical reasons.
Greg, thank you. I appreciate your time. Have a great spring semester, and I'll see you in class. All right, Prof?
Thanks for having me, Tommy.
You bet. Greg Upton, Assistant Research Professor at LSU Center for Energy Studies. He has nothing to worry about, as anybody at UNO will tell you. I seldom went to class. 9:53, back in a...
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.